Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined now by Brad Locke.
Hey.
It's usually Logan Lowry in this spot, but Logan is on vacation. You're listening to Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We thank you for clicking in with us today. All things Mississippi State and Ole Miss. I guess, Brad, with Logan out, this is more like single coverage.
Well, you know, if you can't have the current MSU beat reporter, the next best thing, I guess, is a former MSU beat reporters.
Former's good, and Brad, we know that you wear many hats here at the Journal, man. It's not like you've gone into a vacuum and don't know what's going on here. I know you're keeping up.
I try to. Online editor, so I see pretty much everything that goes on the website. So, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And it is right here in this podcast every week that I plug the memo. So tell us about the memo.
And thank you for doing that. That's a podcast with myself and W. Derek Russell every Wednesday and Friday. That's when new episodes drop. Just talking about the local news that's happening in the region, you know, stuff that we cover. And so we'll have reporters in here on a regular basis, whether it's Emma Kent or Caleb Bedillion or Scott Morris or William Moore, just, you know, anybody, and just give us a little more insight into what they're writing about. So, in fact, a new episode coming Friday, we'll be talking with Jenna Parsons. It's kind of our what I call the fun episode, talking about food and movies and entertainment. Wednesday this week, we talked about some of the more serious stuff, I guess. So be sure to check it out.
Don't you think in the interest of consistency that you should have an initial in your name?
Apparently. We got M. Scott Morris. We got W. Derek Russell. Yeah. Chris Kiefer, our producer, needs one too, I guess.
Okay.
Except that they use their middle names there. I don't want to use my middle name.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I don't know what Hugh Freeze's initials are. Okay.
But, I don't either.
But I thought he did well at Media Days last week. I was surprised, Brad, that during his time in the main ballroom that the social media narrative seemed to be surprise and maybe and people were a little angry that he would engage in this filibuster. His opening remarks went 16 minutes.
Yeah, and really from a tactical standpoint, that was I think a pretty smart move because, you know, they allot him a certain amount of time, so you filibuster, then you know, there's less time for questions. And I believe he did at the outset say, Parrish, that, you know, if you want to ask me about the NCAA situation, just refer to my statement from the other day that the university sent out. So he really kind of, I guess, tried to cut it off at the pass, didn't he?
Well, he did, and I thought he did a good job of that. But I was taken aback, I guess, by the response to that. Number one, the filibuster approach at Media Days is not new. It happens most years with one or multiple coaches.
Yeah.
You know, whether they have NCAA baggage or off-field events around them or not. You know, a lot of guys just would prefer to get up there and talk a lot rather than answer questions. So, yeah, it's not a new approach. It really should have been expected.
Yeah, I mean, as a reporter, I can understand the frustration because, you know, this is a big deal, this whole investigation. Then you got the Houston Nutt lawsuit on top of that. And so, you know, you have questions you want to ask Hugh Freeze, and, you know, legitimate good reasons for wanting to ask those questions. That's your job. But you look at it from Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss's standpoint, this was, you know, really about the only route they could have taken, I think. Now, you got to speak with Hugh along with the other local reporters before he went to the main ballroom. So was that the kind of what kind of approach did you take there?
Well, it was much the same. You know, he was a little more forthcoming there. It was a little more intimate, a smaller setting. Usually we'll go up on the third floor of the hotel. There are some suites and large rooms, and they make those rooms available for coaches that want to do this. And I'll tell you, it's extremely helpful.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that small gathering there might be the only time that we were able to hear about Ole Miss football, like players and positions and things like that. And we did a little bit. I told somebody before Media Day started, I said, this is not the place to be this week if you want to learn about the team.
Yeah.
If you want to hear about what's going on, you know, with the running backs or the linebackers, I mean, you know, you're going to get a little bit of that, but not much at all.
And, you know, reporters were still able to ask kind of around the edges of the NCAA situation or ask some general questions. So it was a topic it was a topic that was discussed. I mean, obviously, that's what everybody, again, that's what everybody really wanted to talk about. So I think one question had to do with how do you prevent corruption from happening within the program.
And you know what? And I thought he gave a good answer to that, Brad. And people don't like hearing this because the buck has to stop somewhere.
Sure.
You know, and the buck is going to stop with the head coach. But his response to that with the tentacles that are attached to a major college football program.
Right.
It's on the mark, man. It's what it is. I mean, you know, there are so many people, and we're talking about boosters here, who want to help, think they know what's best to help their school field a winning team, you know, think they're not going to get caught, whatever. There are so many people out there who think they can help that I think it makes the head coach of any college football program a very different type of CEO. Like, I don't know that you have all those outside influences and people running to help Apple.
No.
You know, or that type of thing. So, yes, the buck stops with the head coach. So, Hugh Freeze is ultimately responsible. He has taken responsibility. He has, you know, in his public comments and, you know, and that sort of thing, he's owned up to it. He's acknowledged mistakes and whatnot. And, you know, in the Ole Miss response to the NCAA, they agree with some of the allegations. They are fighting more of them.
Yeah.
You know, they're working hard in their response to discredit Leo Lewis's testimony. That's what they're doing. And frankly, that's their only approach. If they believe that they can discredit that testimony, and if they believe that his testimony is incorrect, wrong, you know, that's about the only defense they have, because the most serious of the allegations, I think, except for the ones attached to Houston Nutt, are the Leo Lewis ones. Because after that, you get into, you know, some, you know, a little bit of housing and transportation and things like that, and they're all serious. But the most serious ones involve Leo Lewis, and they involve Houston Nutt. You know, they don't involve, and it's a good segue here to the Nutt lawsuit.
Yeah.
Nutt claims that he is not involved in as many of the allegations as Ole Miss implied or said that he was. Okay.
Right.
All right. Number one, when Ole Miss began to make public statements about the NCAA investigation back in 2016, it was spin. Everybody knew it was spin. So to hone in on words like many or most, as Nutt is doing, is, you know, it's almost like Bill Clinton-ish and what is the meaning of is. You know? So yes, Ole Miss was spinning, but it's all come out now. There are 21 allegations, 4 that involve Houston Nutt, 2 that happened while he was coach, and 2 that occurred by the same guys that were on his staff, Chris Vaughn, an assistant coach, and David Saunders, an administrative assistant. You know, 2 more that those guys are alleged to have done during the investigation. Okay, so those are nuts, 4 out of 21. But when you talk about fixing an ACT test, you know, changing answers on a standardized test like that to get prospects eligible, that's huge. I mean, that's not just lodging and transportation.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Maybe it's only a handful of violations, but they're pretty big ones.
Yeah,
right there. And you know, I'm no lawyer, so I don't know, but this would seem like a lawsuit that is kind of on shaky ground, just in my somewhat educated opinion.
Well, I would agree, but, you know, whatever Houston has his motivations in doing this, whatever they are. I did look at, you know, one of the things he said was the commentary or the narrative from Ole Miss regarding his role in the investigation has made it difficult for him to get a job.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he last coached at Ole Miss in 2011.
And those last 2 years were not good.
They were really bad.
They were abysmal.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, 2011, those 3 games after it was announced that Houston would would be fired.
Right.
But he would coach those last 3 games.
Yeah.
It was the worst I've ever seen Ole Miss football. Okay, but be that as it may, that was 2011. It's 2016 before that narrative comes out with Ole Miss and the NCAA. You got 5 years of trying to get a job where that doesn't really come into play.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, that would seem to be a bit of a stretch that it's all Ole Miss's fault that Houston could not land another high-profile coaching job. And, you know, talk about the tentacles that Hugh Freeze mentioned and just, you know, what all goes into trying to manage a college football program. Let's be honest, every SEC program is going to periodically come across these kind of issues. Maybe not a huge investigation like this, but given a long enough timeline, yeah, they probably will. I mean, Mississippi State saw it with the most recently with the Will Redmond thing. A coach can only do, I mean, he's, like you said, the buck stops with him, but he's got to, you know, communicate to his coaches and players the right things to do, communicate to the fans and boosters best he can the right thing to do. But ultimately, you know, it's like having kids. You raise them right, but you can't control what they actually do.
Well, and I'll tell you what, you know, Ole Miss is very strong in its language right now in its response to the NCAA in support of Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
I mean, they say that he's exceeded the minimums, he's done all the right things in compliance, in education of his staff and boosters. I mean, they're very behind him right now. Shift gears a little bit. Mississippi State picked sixth in the SEC West. Ole Miss picked seventh. Do you think those are good spots for them right now?
I don't
know. Somebody's got to be last.
That's almost like the default. When it comes to these media predictions every year, it's almost like, oh, by default, we're going to pick State and Ole Miss at the bottom. Now, I don't know. You would know better than this. Now, Ole Miss, I don't know how much of that is a product of this investigation and the scholarship cuts, and they're thinking, oh, well, you know, the defense was pretty bad last year, let's be honest. MSU, Dan Mullen has a history of exceeding these expectations, I mean, which is not easy to do in the West. And in fact, I think Rick Cleveland had a column in Thursday's Today's Journal talking about finishing last in the SEC doesn't mean you're a bad team. You know, because the West, in the West especially, if you finish last in the West, you still might be borderline bowl worthy. And in another conference, you might be competing for the division title. So, but now Ole Miss, they only got 379 votes. MSU got 633. So people really don't think a lot of the Rebels perish.
Right. And for obvious reasons. One, both these teams had losing records in the regular season last year.
True.
Okay. They both had that. All right, and Ole Miss was abysmal at the end. I mean, you know, after the Chad Kelly injury and Shea Patterson came in with that successful debut at Texas A&M, they had two games left. I thought, you know what, they're going to at least split these games, and there's going to be like the Liberty Bowl or something in the future.
Yeah.
I thought that would happen based on that Texas A&M game. The defense wasn't going to get much better, but you know, I thought the effort was really lacking the last couple of games. One thing that I did not put enough consideration into at the beginning when they were moving from Chad Kelly to Shea Patterson was the catchability of the ball. Ole Miss has very good receivers, had good receivers last year, experienced guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, the drops that they had in those last two games – might have changed the Vanderbilt game, wasn't going to change the MSU game. When they got behind in the Egg Bowl, I mean, they just started mailing it in, it looked like. That was something that in that transition I really didn't put enough stock into, and I really watched the chemistry and timing of the receivers and Shea Patterson in the spring. I think that's going to be much better.
Yeah, and you've got the coordinators coming in on both sides of the ball, so there's going to be an adjustment period, I guess. I mean, you'll see coordinators come in and have an immediate impact, certainly. And I think that could be possible at MSU with Todd Grantham because he's got a really good resume and a good history of turning defenses around and making them strong. But as far as the Ole Miss defense, it was just so bad last year, man. And this, you wonder if they even have the personnel to do what they want to do with Wesley McGriff.
It was bad. And you know, I look at them right now, and I tell people, Brad, I think there is a path to improvement for Ole Miss defensively. And it has to start on the defensive line. And a lot of it deals with Breland Speaks. If he plays as he did as a redshirt freshman and not as he did last year, you know, if he really is back, so to speak, as they think he is after spring, then that's a pretty good group with Marquise Haynes at one end, you know, career sack leader. Benito Jones, a freshman All-American last year. He was their best defensive lineman, a freshman, at the end of last year.
Yeah.
He's back. Assuming he makes that year one to year two leap that coaches talk about, then you put Breland Speaks in there. All of a sudden, you've got a pretty good defensive line. If Speaks is the player they think he is after spring,
right?
They've got to get better at linebacker. I think they have interesting options in the secondary. So, I mean, there's a path. I think they can be better. you know, a lot of things have to go right.
Yeah, they may just have to outscore people for a while. And I think the offense has really good. I really like the potential of that offense. I like Shea Patterson. It just needs a little more seasoning. I love the receiving core. DK Metcalf is coming back from that injury. You got the kid from Starkville, A.J. Brown.
Yes.
You got some other guys. Jordan Wilkins, be interested to see how the running game performs with him back after that year off. And, you know, the running game has been hit or miss for Ole Miss in recent years, certainly.
Well, and they say right now, Brad, that you know, coaches and players alike think the best part of the offense right now is the line.
Yeah.
And they've put a lot of effort into recruiting to that the last couple of years. Now they've got you know, I counted up six guys who started at least five games last year, so a lot of experience coming back and some young guys too. All right, one other item we wanted to hit, Brad. Justin Reed, this happened while I was on vacation, former basketball star at Ole Miss, had a five-year NBA career, moved around with several teams, is battling cancer.
Yeah.
Spinal cancer, I believe, and a GoFundMe page has been set up to assist with his expenses. And as of this recording, it's at $23,720 of a $50,000 goal. So,
yeah.
You know, athletes, college athletes particularly, you know, the larger the school, the bigger the network. But, you know, they have a base of people that – you know, if they were good players and good careers, remember them, love them,
oh, yeah.
want to help and things like this. I mean, you see this in guys as they enter the job market.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a network that goes along with being a college athlete that that is a very good thing for most of them.
Yeah, and people should remember who Justin Reed is. In fact, you would know this better than me, Parrish, but if you put together like an all-time Ole Miss basketball team, like 10 guys, five starters, five bench guys, you'd have to at least consider Justin Reed, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, when you've got you might have a guy who is an elite three-point shooter, like almost never misses, or you might have this guy that creates off the dribble and gets to the rim and is a very physical player, but when you've got somebody that does both, you've got something very special, and Justin Reed did both.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that kind of guy. I mean, he was extremely physical. He was a, you know, a three-point presence at 6'8", 6'9", out there on the perimeter, but putting the ball on the floor, getting to the rim, just a very athletic player and a good personality, an easygoing guy. You know, you probably remember, Brad, I don't know where you were back then. You may have been back in North Carolina.
What years did he play again? Remind me.
3-2-1. I think that I know I covered. I guess I had him for 2 years.
I got here in 2002. So
yeah, okay.
Fall of 2002.
But surely you remember the Provine Posse. You remember we like to throw out that moniker there, and he was certainly part of that, along with David Sanders, who was 1 year ahead of Reed and Aaron Harper.
Yeah,
Harper was the 3-point shooter, but those guys all coming from Provine High School in Jackson, and somebody early on attached Provine Posse to that. And I remember after one game when they lost or they didn't play well, Rod Barnes didn't really like that. Didn't want to talk about the Provine Posse, but you know, that's how coaches are. But anyway, Justin Reed right now really you know, in a struggle. I get so tired of cancer, Brad. I know you do too. We've reached that time in life where you just know so many people who are affected by it, and we can just cast a wide net, and so many acquaintances and different people that we know that are affected. But I can think of three in my life who are very, very close to me that you know, two have passed away, and another is dealing with it right now, and it's just what do you do?
you just
pray and.
Yeah,
and you know, you hope that there's a network of resources or people can get the help they need. But you know, it can wear you down hearing about it so much.
Oh yeah, certainly can. And just, you know, best wishes to Justin Reed. And you know, good thing about Mississippi, and this goes for Ole Miss fans, MEC fans, just people in general, is, and I've seen this like studies done, we're probably we might be the most generous state, the most giving state in the country. in a state that, you know, is not in great shape economically, where people don't make a lot of money, people find ways to help each other. And it looks like people are helping Justin Reed, and that's encouraging to see.
Well, that's great. And hopefully this goes well for Justin, and he is able to, again, get the help and the support that he needs, and is able to be a cancer survivor. We hope so. I saw a picture on social media of Justin in a hospital room. I don't know when the picture was taken. I saw it earlier this week, but he was just kind of gave a thumbs up. I mean, I'm sure he knows what he is in for with this battle right now. Brad, tell us again about the memo.
Memo, it's All Things Northeast Mississippi News and Entertainment. New episodes every Wednesday and Friday. You can find it in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at memo.djournal.com. I should also mention the Prep Rally, the high school sports podcast. If you're into high school sports, every Wednesday, Gene Phillips and I talk about what's going on in the area there. You can find that in iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com.
Yeah, and Prep Rally is going to take on a new look now because Gene's heading out the door.
He's retiring.
And, we got Dalton Middleton's new in the house. So we'll still have quality people, quality coverage.
Yeah.
There'll be some new names and faces there.
With
Prep Rally. Folks, we thank you for clicking in with us today on this edition of Double Coverage. I'm Parrish Alford, the Ole Miss beat writer for the Daily Journal, and come back and join us again.
Thanks for having me, Parrish.